Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
You know, Mark, the world is shrinking as far as immigration investment is concerned, and as far as developers who want to go out and find investors are concerned.
That's right, Mona. And that's why very often we feature voices on this show, people that are on the scene.
A travelogue, actually.
It's a travelogue,
Investment Voice travels.
Investment Voice does travel. And we feature those voices here on this show.
Well, we actually have Sam Odani back on the show today, who's been out of the U.S. for some time with his trip across Southeast Asia.
Yes, Mona, I have been out a long, long time. It's been over 3 months now, and I still have at least a month and a half to go, Mona.
Wow. Last time you were on the show, which was just a few weeks ago, we had done an outline of what it was: Vietnam and Taiwan, South Korea. Where are you today?
I have been traveling in China for 6 weeks. I went to 7 cities and met with 30 agents. Those cities are Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, the big 4. But I also went to 3 smaller ones: Wuhan, Suzhou, and Hangzhou.
China is very important. As much as other countries have their own importance, China really is where EB5 took off for so many years. And unfortunately, China was backlogged or has been backlogged. Why do you feel, Sam, that China stands out on its own?
Well, I mean, it's a matter mostly of volume, but it's also a matter of velocity. It's both volume and velocity. It is so enormous that in many ways, there was a time roughly 2013 through 16 where China was synonymous with the entire EB5 market, did over 80% of the world at the time.
That's right.
And I think we are in an analogous situation. It's not exactly the same because India has come in strong. It's not suddenly going to shrink. Vietnam has come in strong. It's not going to shrink. Markets in other parts of the world are better developed now than they were between 2013 and 16. So I think the days of 80% China are over. But China is such a big 800-pound gorilla. The only, I repeat, the only 800-pound gorilla in this market, that what happens there is going to cast a long shadow over the rest of the industry.
I will agree with you. Back in 2011, I think was the first time we actually took EB5 to India, and it was a total disaster. I mean, India didn't really emerge until 2017. But even after China really dropped out of the market in 2017, the market's been going strong without China.
Yes, and I expect it to continue just as strong. So that makes my point even more salient, because even though the rest of the market continues to remain as strong as it was in 2017 with the rise of India, or 2018 or 2019, which is the last full year we had a real market, because after that we had COVID and all the interruptions. Despite that, what we are seeing right now in terms of volume and velocity from China, we are already seeing, remember, this is not a forecast for the rest of the year. I'm telling you what we have seen in the last 30 days, 60 days, 90 days in China, just in that time frame, establishes China as the dominant force and the only 800-pound gorilla, despite the fact that the rest of the market has not gone away. So what you're saying right now simply underlines my point, Mona.
Please, could you have figures?
Yes. So let me begin with figures. So I met with 30 agents. Okay. And remember, I went to, of the 7 cities I visited, 4 of them are traditionally not only the 4 biggest cities in China, but traditionally have been the main sources of EB5 wires from China. Not because there aren't wires coming from places like Chengdu and Chongqing and Tianjin and other places, many, many, many cities, too numerous to mention. Not because there aren't wires coming from there, but because agents who are headquartered in these 4 cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, Shenzhen, agents who are headquartered in these 4 cities have offices in multiple places in China. I met with many agents who had 2 offices, 4 offices, 6 offices, 8 offices, 10 offices. And let's talk about the big 5.
I do think there is one thing I would like to bring out for our listener, because a lot of the world now, anyone who goes out and markets, they don't really come across the agent complexities the way we do in China. In China, really everything is run through an agent, and an agent over there is regulated by the government.
Yes and no. That's a very good point. Let's talk about that. Okay. Yes, it's an agent market. That has not changed. You are completely right about that. The regulation has changed dramatically. Prior to roughly, I think it was November 2018, and I've seen the memo. It's in Mandarin. It was from the Ministry of Public Security, and I had it translated. But prior to that time, there were 2 jurisdictions within China, to the best of my knowledge, where you did not have government regulation of EB-5 agents. And those 2 places were the province of Guangdong. That's very important because it encompasses both the cities of Guangzhou and Shenzhen, both, plus the federal territory or whatever it's called of Shanghai, the city of Shanghai, let's call it. In those 2 places, the regulations on, you know, the requirement of a licensure for agents ceased back in somewhere around 2016 or thereabouts, or 17. Now, that is not true. As of November 2018, the entire territory of the People's Republic of China, the Ministry of Public Security rescinded every license as of that point. So it is no longer a regulated industry. It is an industry which is still agent run, but no longer because of force of government diktat. It is agent run by partly because of tradition and custom, but mostly because of necessity. Language is a big issue. Plus, the fact is that people look to these agents for doing many things, not just EB-5. They look to them for EB-2s, EB-1s, student visas. The number goes on and on and on and on, and of course, for other countries.
It used to be very expensive, though. The cost of becoming an agent was very expensive. It could cost as much as $30,000 a year.
Yes, and that I presume was the insurance fee that they had to pay into a fund in various provinces, plus, of course, the license fee to maintain the license. And that is no longer true, to the best of my knowledge, as of November 2018. So that was quite some time ago. So bear in mind that the big 5, okay, when people talk about large agents in the world, there's only 5 of them, and they're all of them in China. I met with 4 out of the 5. The 5th one I'll be meeting sometime later this year. These fellas, each of them has over 10 offices, in some cases over 20 offices across the length and breadth of China. So that's, you know, what I'm trying to say is that even though I visited only 7 cities, I do have my pulse on what's happening across the length and breadth of China. So let's talk about the big 5. They're each of them doing 30 wires a month each for the last 90 days. 30 wires a month. Each. That's 150 wires.
I do believe that because from my knowledge over what's going on here, there has been more than what you would call a slow trickle of Chinese coming back into the market.
Oh, it's a flood. There's no doubt about it. It's an overwhelming flood. Let me give you some more numbers. I met with many of them enough to establish that these numbers are real. There's approximately 20 agents in China, in addition to the 5 I just mentioned, 20 agents in China who are each doing approximately 5 wires a month each. So that's another 100 wires on top of the 150. So if you just look at this big and quote unquote medium agents, we're looking at about 250 wires coming in for each of the last 3 months. And there was a smaller number coming in for the 3 months prior to that. So what does that mean? It means that the entire 2-year quota, remember the Reform and Integrity Act allows the numbers, unused numbers from 1 quota year to go into the next quota year. So we have effectively a 2-year quota piled up. And all of that, if you use the number of roughly 2 people per family in China, all of that should be sold out by the end of this month or maybe end of next month. So as of, let's say, August 1st at the latest, we will already be starting to consume future years' numbers in China. And this is even before the market has really got going. So I hope this gives you some actual numerical numbers and an idea of what I mean by volume and velocity.
Well, that worries me a lot about the backlogs growing again in the TEA in rural markets. But let me ask you, Sam, what are they looking for? It is the set-asides, of course, that we're seeing all the Chinese coming into.
That's excellent. You see, in other words, why is this happening? Why is such an outpouring of tremendous volume? It's obvious Congress has hit the ball out of the park here by reducing the perceived and actually real weight in China for new investments from a 10-year wait for getting a green card to probably about a 2-year wait. That is the single biggest factor, in a way, the only factor causing the explosion in the Chinese market. So it's important to realize a lot of people here in the United States are probably feeling that, oh, it was because of the widespread disappointment about in the Chinese populace, about their government's awkward handling of COVID, which has caused people to lose confidence in their government and they're looking for greener shores. That is utterly not true. I'm not suggesting there can't be individual families who might have such a motivation. The real motivation is clear, that 10 years was a big deterrent to families considering moving to the United States using the investment program to be 2 years, which almost everyone in China views as a very reasonable number. But again, remember, the 2 years is history already, as of the end of June or as of the end of July, definitely by the end of July. And to prove that, of the five biggest projects in terms of numbers of slots, all five are rural, by the way, which have been in the market in the last 30, 60, 90, maybe a little longer, 120 days, three out of the five biggest projects all sold out already.
Wow. Wow.
I want to underline the volume and velocity. It really knocked me off my feet when I arrived in China and started talking to agent after agent after agent after agent.
Sam, are you seeing older agents still in business when you talk about Big Five?
And by older, I assume Mona is talking about the Chinese agents that have been around for a while, the original ones, the ones that have been around since before all these changes, RIA and everything even before that.
Yes. Out of the five big agents in China, four out of the five are the older agents. There's one new one. And in terms of the medium-sized agents, I can tell you a lot of the older agents who had given up this market and were focusing on the Caribbean, focusing on Europe, a lot of these older agents have come back into the market. And I want to emphasize this, that all of this is, the fire is just beginning to spread. There's no doubt about it. All the medium-sized and small-sized agents I talked to had just woken up from their slumber literally 30 days before I met them. Many of them were still in the process of just figuring out which project to go with. And the fire is just spreading.
And we're just still doing project documents. We can't get project documents done fast enough. This is crazy, Sam.
Yes. Now, I want to give you one practical example of what it's doing to the market. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. An agent mentioned it to me about a project, and he showed me the pie chart of the cap stack of this project. It's from one of the big names. They've been in the top three EB-5 raisers in the world for at least a decade. So, you know, they're the big established players in the industry. And obviously, they sold out so quickly. They sold out all the projects they had so fast that this particular project that they've just brought into the market, I looked at the cap stack and I couldn't believe my eyes. 4% equity. 4%. Just 4%. I don't think we see that too often.
What do you mean 4%? Are they giving 4% equity away? What do you mean?
No. The project has only, when the cap stack is finally complete, the documents show the developer's equity will only be 4% of the entire cap stack.
Oh, I see.
Now, that is not something you see every day, as you know. Usually, the equity component of the developer is considerably more.
Of course.
The market is absorbing these issues at such a rapid pace, selling out issue after issue after issue so rapidly that this old-time established large player has actually come to the market with something which would ordinarily be regarded as something which the cap stack is so shaky that agents couldn't find confidence in it and investors wouldn't go for it. But they're in the market, and I have no doubt they'll sell out pretty soon.
Oh, so Sam, if already the market seems to have got saturated, is there any room for newer developers coming in or people with newer projects coming in?
Oh, I hope I'm saying exactly the opposite of saturated. I'm saying the market is so unsaturated that people are pouring into the market.
By saturated, I mean that if the visas are going to get eaten up quickly, I'm very mindful of how quickly visas are going to be eaten up, because we're not just talking about China. There's a lot of visas going out to these areas from India and from Vietnam.
Yes and no. Let's address that. That's a very good perspective that you have on this issue. Both are true. Both these things, which appear kind of contradictory at first glance, are both actually completely true. On the one hand, as I said, I think all the quota that was available, let's say as of January 1st, from two quota years, this current one and the past one, under the Reform and Integrity Act, provisions for carrying forward unused numbers, all of it should be gone by the end of June or end of July from China alone. Okay? And you're quite right. India and Vietnam have not exactly gone to sleep. They're still around and they're still pretty good sized. But despite that, what I'm saying is that the real flood of volume from China is still ahead of us, as best as I can see. So what does that mean? Well, the answer is obvious. Put both things together, which appear contradictory on the surface. The real point is that we are going to see a huge backlog of China of staggering dimensions build up within the next 3, 6, 9 months. Now, what happens to the market when that big backlog, the Department of State gets around to measuring it and issuing a notice? Who knows? I have no freaking clue. I doubt if many people can shed a light on how Chinese investors will react. But I can say that over the next 3, 6, 9 months, as best as I can tell, we're seeing a tsunami build here.
Well, that's what I was asking, Sam. Is it worth new developers going into China right now? There's a lot of effort to go into China, getting documents translated and just meeting and sort of working with agents. It takes time. It takes money. Is it worth it?
Yes and no. On the one hand, if you say, well, is it going to be worth it to get the money? Yes. The answer is a definite, unqualified yes. But where's the no? The no is really straightforward. I mean, if I were in the shoes of a developer who would be considering a trip to China, I would definitely be telling everyone who is subscribing to my issue that, look, there's a lot of volume. There's a lot of demand, as best as we can tell. So please bear in mind the availability of visas is sharply limited. It's numerically limited by Congress, and only Congress can do anything about it. And they've realistically not going to do anything about the quota numbers for a long, long time to come. I mean, that's just the way immigration politics are in the United States and Washington, D.C. So they got to be prepared for a wait. And it could be a long wait. How long? It's going to be very hard to say. All we can say is that if they jump in line in the next 3, 6, 9 months, hopefully that wait will be somewhere between 2 to 5 years. But if they're going to wait more than 9 months or 12 months to jump in, they're looking at a 5 to 10 year wait, which I think will deter a lot of people and might affect the raise. So I would say 2 to 5 years, people are probably going to be willing to wait for that period of time. So is there an opportunity for developers in the next 3, 6, 9 months? The answer is an unqualified yes, even after giving the best possible warnings in terms of what the wait might be. And look, you want to be realistic. You want to tell people how much they might wait, Mona, because you don't want to be in a situation where you told somebody X number of years and they got to wait 2X number of years. They're going to be really mad, and you don't want unhappy investors. So that's my 2 cents. I hope that answers the question, Mona.
It does. However, I am still reluctant to tell anyone to just run to China just because of previous experiences. I do know that this is definitely a good space for investors. But let me ask you, the newer investors, the newer agents, or even the older agents, do you see an understanding of EB5 since RIA was passed?
Yes and no. But I do think that you've got to understand the nuances here. So let's take it apart in different ways. Firstly, yeah, we're talking about new RIA, right? Okay. So what does a new RIA do? Well, it's clearly Congress has sent a commandment, not a signal, a commandment to the market, go rural, right? 2 to 1 in terms of the quota. Congress is very clear, right? What we are seeing, I mean, at least what I saw, in terms of not making any kind of guesswork here, I'm just telling you what I actually saw is that the demand that they're seeing from investors is approximately 70-30. 70-30. in favor of rural, 70% rural, 30% urban. That's what they showed, which is almost exactly in line with what Congress had in mind. But there's a deeper point here. There is, I think, a move towards going even greater into rural than 70-30. And the reason is that there is a number of projects which took advantage of the fact that the Bureau of Labor Statistics reporting of unemployment numbers is obviously in arrears. Obviously, in time, it lags the reality of the unemployment situation. And therefore, because of the temporary COVID bump that we saw in unemployment across the world, and of course in the United States too, a lot of counties in the United States which would not ordinarily have high unemployment were classified as high unemployment areas on a temporary basis because of that bump.
Sam, could you give us some examples of these counties?
All of LA County, all of Queens County, New York, all of Kings County, New York, which is Brooklyn, New York. These are three examples which happen to host a significant number, historically, a significant number of EB-5 projects. Now, let's say a project rushed and filed a 956F before the Bureau of Labor Statistics updated their numbers, let's say 6 months ago, whatever it was. Does that mean, now, of course, under the letter of the law, the 956F freezes the high unemployment area. But look, Congress has given a clear direction to USCIS. They've said that the idea that 90% or more of the money going into the three metropolitan areas of Los Angeles, New York, and Miami is not national policy. They want to see the largesse spread, the largesse and the bounty, that is EB-5, spread over all the 50 United States, all the 3,500 approximate counties that we have in the United States. So I think that all the new powers that the Reform and Integrity Act that USCIS has acquired through that act, I strongly suspect that if you are building a project in, let's say, Pittsburgh or Tampa or someplace which is not one of those three metro areas, and it is in a part of town which is truly has chronic unemployment, not a temporary COVID unemployment, I do think the USCIS is going to fulfill congressional mandate and approve those HOAs in their own leisurely fashion. But if you're talking about LA, you're talking about New York, you're talking about Miami, and you're trying to take advantage of the temporary bump, USCIS, I strongly suspect, may not think that way. And what I saw in the agency is a recognition. It's not there amongst investors yet, but the agents are aware, at least some of them are aware, at least the bigger ones, that there is an inherent uncertainty in the HOA designations. There is no longer a TEA letter issued by one of the thousands of officials who could issue it under the old act, which was binding on USCIS, that the TEA has been already approved. Now the authority to approve the TEA is rests with USCIS and only with USCIS. And to the best of my knowledge, it's been more than a year since the act went into effect, and not a single high unemployment area has yet been designated by USCIS.
I do understand where you're coming from, Sam. We all understand that the reason that urban was more popular than rural was the economics behind it. Do the agents see the same? Are they satisfied?
In a way, yes. In a way, no. Why? Because, yeah, urban is attractive because people in this market are used to seeing skyscrapers, you know, marble lobbies, glittering, glamorous projects. Yeah. But almost every agent brought up this point to me. There have been failures. There have been collapses. There have been bankruptcies of regional center after regional center after regional center in terms of specific projects with huge numbers of investors. And that is really, really something that they are upset about. Because the way they put it to me is that, look, if we have one happy investor who, you know, gets the 526, gets the 829, gets the money back, they'll come and recommend and refer two friends or two relatives to us. But if we have one unhappy one who failed in any of those three, especially on the money part, they'll go tell 10 people to stay away from us. So that is something that is affecting the market. They also have to deal now with their old investors. They call them clients, the old clients that now have to wait significantly longer because of the RIA reducing the available numbers from 10,000 to 6,800.
Yeah, that's causing a lot of angst.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the way they put it is that these fellas, they wait outside the office and then they follow our staff home. I mean, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but the point is that the staff is handling calls from irate and anxious people whose life plans have been turned upside down by the RIA. That time spent is not time spent talking to new investors, holding their hands, helping them through the process and getting revenue in. It's an expense, not an income. That's the issue.
Sam, what are you seeing with regards to filling out the new Form K? Is there reluctance? Are the agents reluctant to actually show how much commission they're making? Because we know that the Chinese agents ask the maximum amount of commission.
The market is all over the map on that, Mona. Some of the bigger ones are definitely filling out and have already filled out Form K for a number of projects. They've already consulted their own attorneys, they told me, their own attorneys, repeat, securities attorneys in the United States. And yeah, the bigger ones, there's no issue. The medium-sized ones are all over the map. The small ones, there's all kinds of subterfuges being explored through cutouts and intermediaries and all kinds of stuff. It's a mess, Mona. It's a mess.
That's not good. And another question that I do have for you, are the Chinese taking advantage of the concurrent filing, which came under RIA?
The answer is yes, but it's a bit complicated. Look, of the various visas that have dual intent, so you don't have the issue of USCIS and at the interview stage for the 485 doing things like revoking green cards, annulling 10-year B1, B2s that were previously issued, finding immigration fraud and all those horrible consequences. Look at the visas, right? O, H, and L, these three visas would certainly work, wouldn't they? Obviously, in terms of dual intent. But E-visas, because of the change in interpretation by the Department of State, are basically unpractical for most people in China. And the P visas obviously would be too small in terms of the number of people affected by it. So I'm sorry to say, but most agents did not realize that this is an issue. What they're doing, guided by, I'm sorry to say, but some very inept counsel in the United States, I don't mean one individual, I mean many, many, that they're trying to do the B1, B2 route.
Oh.
Now, I'm not saying it can't work. If you have truly non-immigrant intent when you enter and you can document it, you can prove it. But most of them are just saying, look, you go with the B1, B2, spend 90 days, and then you'll be all okay. I don't think USCIS was born yesterday. I think this is a explosion waiting to happen. Obviously, the concurrent filing is best for Fs, and many agents have done them already for Fs. But the B1, B2 is, I think, a bomb waiting to go off.
Not a good sign. What about alternative work, as in agents doing maybe marketing European stuff?
Yeah. They're doing Caribbean. They're doing Europe. They're all very clear that with the increase in amount from 500 to 800, the Caribbean and European programs, many of them have acquired a new attractiveness, an additional sheen. But I want to talk a bit about the other forms of American immigration that these folks have gotten into during the kind of a slowdown in EB-5 that we saw from 2017, 18, 19, and onward. I heard again and again, L1, EB-1C, we saw a spate of that. And we all know that the approval rates are not high. And many, many, many agents got their fingers burnt and have gotten out of the L1, EB-1C because it really isn't working for them. They're not getting sufficient quantities of approval. And kudos to USCIS to see through some of these subterfuges because, you know, if it is a proper corporation and it's a real situation, they should approve. And I believe they are approving. But when people are just trying to create fake shell entities and are trying to pass them off, they shouldn't work and they aren't working, which is great. But what I saw, and I was kind of surprised by this, is a tremendous number of agents told me that they've been doing EB-1As and NIWs. Now, look, we know China's full of very smart people. So I have no problem with them doing EB-1As and NIWs. But what I saw...
National interest waivers for anybody who wants to know.
Extraordinary researchers and professors for the EB-1A, yes. Right? And aliens of extraordinary ability, yes. and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, China's full of very bright people. Of course, we don't get that. But the volume I saw, I think it staggers the imagination in terms of the quantities of EB-1A and NIW that are, you know, being poured into the USCIS. I am afraid that something's going to happen there somewhere, Mona.
Not good. Well, Sam, this insight has been valuable. But let me ask you, what would you suggest as being the highlight of your trip?
Mona, I met a wonderful person and he said something which has really touched my heart. And I think I have learned a lot from what he said. It's all EB-5 related, but what he said is so broad. It touches life of all kinds, not just immigration. He was a veteran agent, an old man, 75 years old. He's been in this business a long, long, long time. All right. And I was giving him the lowdown about the Reform and Integrity Act. And I was, my central message was that, like most things in life, it has both good news and bad news. It's not just unalloyed good news. There's a lot of bad news in there. He has to hold the hands of the, you know, old clients that he sent who are crying probably with the additional years and years that they face of waiting for their green cards. And many, many other issues. He has to sell projects which he's unfamiliar with. His staff has to learn what to do with rural projects. And so I was telling him it's both good and bad news. And this man was smiling at me all along for an hour when I was recounting bad news after bad news. He was just smiling at me. And I eventually had to tell him, sir, I am defeated by your smile, sir. I'm communicating bad news to you. And you were smiling all along. And this is what he told me. He says, Sam, I am 75 years old. And good news and bad news is one and the same to me. That's what he said. And I was really touched by that because, you know, in life, we all go through good times and bad times. We have to face good news, all of us, and bad news. And why not do it with a smile like this man did? Why do we have to sit with our heads in our hands and cry when we get bad news? Bad news is part of life too. And he took it in stride and I couldn't knock it off his face. So I felt that that was really a touching moment. And I really learned a lot from the way he put it, you know, bad news and good news. He says, I'm 75. It's one and the same to me.
Oh, part of life. Well, Sam, thank you. From here, where do you go?
I'm in India right now. I have a huge trip of India planned. So hopefully I'll come back and tell you about many, many, many cities in India and what's going on with ED5 in India next time.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Sam, for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure and I'm delighted to be back again.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.